Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. This is episode 54, and today we are going to be talking about the Hawks, the Bulls, and the Rockets, and I'll be joined by Yahoo's Dan Titus. Let's go ahead and get into it. And quickly, before we start talking about them and I bring Dan in, I just wanted to let you guys know that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. We know every dude gets the heebie-jeebies when it's time for a close shave down under, especially when using the wrong tools. That's precisely why Manscaped is my go-to for those delicate spots. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. And just as a reminder, you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love. And feel free as a dove. As I said, we are going to be talking about fantasy basketball. We are going to be talking about the Atlanta Hawks, the Chicago Bulls, the Houston Rockets, and I'm going to bring in Yahoo's Dan Titus. Dan, how are you doing today?
Doing good, Noah. Good to talk to you, man. Congrats on episode 54. This is the Horace Grant podcast, I guess, today. Charles Smith, I believe, as well. Host of other players that wore number 54. I feel like we might not see 54 again in the NBA. What are your thoughts on that? Doesn't that seem like this is an old school number?
It is. It wasn't a thought I had before this moment. So I'm trying to collect my thoughts a little bit. I feel like you could also name like a million different linebackers that are number 54 and we could just have it be special that way. But yeah, I mean, aside from the random guy that just chooses a high number for whatever reason, like 54 isn't like a, yeah. I mean, like, you know, we see 55, like Luka's 77, that feels pretty out there, but 54 is like just oddly specific to the point that I think you're right. Like there's no way we have another 54 unless it's a random 10-day contract picked up during silly season by right. Some guy that's just all they have left is you can take 54. I'm sorry. So
I feel like it's a mandatory power forward number. And like now with power forwards being like stretch fours, they're like going like number 7, number 9, like mm-hmm. the Rashard Lewis, you know, Chet Holmgren. I was just looking down the list actually, because I don't know why this took me here. Patrick Patterson was probably the most recent 54 okay. that I remember.
That is recent.
After that, dude, like, I mean, Chris Wilcox, like, we're going into all these dudes, Ed Pinckney. You're like, we're just looking at power forwards. And I feel like nowadays, power forwards are like a cool thing to be. So you don't want to be number 54. Mm-hmm.
I feel like to wear number 54, you have to average 3 fouls per game. I could be totally wrong, but like, you have to have that type of mentality, be that type of player to like really pull off number 54. You can't be a smooth handle wearing right, number 54. Like you have to be a pest. And you're probably right. It has to be a power forward that fouls. That's right. Number 54
is. 6'8", 260 pounds is the 54, number 54 that I'm looking at.
There we go.
Beef Stew is a candidate. I feel like he should embrace 54.
I think Draymond is 2 years away from being number 54. If he's going to go sign somewhere else and finish his career as a number 54. Wow. Okay. So didn't expect to start off with that, but that was fun. But we are going to talk about the Hawks, the Bulls, and the Rockets. As I said, we'll start with Atlanta because this is fun. This is fun for me. And you know, when I'm assuming you at least, I don't know if you watched the draft lottery, but you at least saw it after. What went through your mind like seeing Atlanta jump up from 10 to 1?
I think it finally gave us some sense of the process working. Like, you know, all these teams like Detroit and Washington, you know, obviously they're throwing their season in the hopes of getting a good draft pick. And then someone like that happens to get into the play-in tournament, winds up getting the number one pick, their first in franchise history. I was pretty excited for it. And by all accounts, like I like Landry Fields as a GM. He's pretty thoughtful, methodical. Some of the acquisitions that he's made at the deadline and to kind of bolster that roster over the last couple of years has been interesting. So I'm really curious to see now. And, you know, Raf and I were talking about it with Vaughn on the Roto World podcast yesterday. You know what? I think this might be the point where we actually see Clint Capela traded. And who knows who else might actually be dealt too, because we know the Trae Young and DeJounte Murray backcourt had mixed reviews. You know, their on and off the court numbers weren't great together. So I think that this is going to be a really interesting time for Atlanta, and they have the number one pick. So I think there's like a pretty much one person that's pretty much the top of the list. And if you draft that guy, you're going to have to, there's going to be some other dominoes that fall there.
Yeah. I think they were already going to have to make moves this summer, but now that they have the number one pick, I think they have better options for some of these moves to make. Like they can go a few different directions. Just texting with some of my friends that are also Hawks fans. Like before I was like, you know what, if we're going to win the lottery, it's going to be this freaking year that's considered the worst draft class in 20 years. Like if we're going to do it, because in the lottery with Anthony Edwards, okay, we moved down. Like homegrown, Atlanta zone, went to UGA after playing high school in Atlanta, growing up there, and we fall. And then the year before that, Zion goes and rubs the Hawks basketball right before the lottery, Hawks fall. I was like, it's going to be this freaking year. But I am pretty happy with Alex Saar being the top prospect. I do like him, and he did play two seasons of Overtime Elite in Atlanta, so he's a little bit familiar with the area. So, you know, it's kind of like a kind of an Atlanta guy going, potentially going first. I guess we don't really know at this point, but
right.
I have my slides with a little bit of information. So the Hawks went 36-46 this year, finished 10th in the East, lost the first play-in game to Chicago. Thank you, Coby White, for getting the Hawks the number one pick now. Don't have any other picks. They had Sacramento's lottery protected first, but because they didn't make the playoffs, they'll keep their pick. For each of these teams, as I've been going through this, I've been assigning a team direction. And for the Hawks, I have in limbo with stars. Like they have Trae Young. They have DeJounte Murray. They have a budding star in Jalen Johnson. Now they have the number one overall pick. Obviously, not all of those players are going to be on the team again next year, but they have pieces and they have very good pieces, but they've been stuck in the middle for the past three seasons since their miraculous Eastern Conference Finals run. They've been in the play-in tournament for three straight years. This was the first year they didn't make it out of the play-in tournament. Obviously that's just not good enough. Like that's not where you want to be. You don't want to be the team that's stuck in the play-in tournament for X amount of years. And I'm sorry that I brought you on to talk about two of the teams that are consistently in the play-in tournament, but how do you kind of feel about where the Hawks are at right now?
I think you stated it great. I think they are in a state of limbo because at this point you have a choice between pretty much DeJounte Murray and Trae Young. And by all accounts, you know, Trae Young has voiced his displeasure of, you know, whether this team construct or the lack of winning. I think he's hinted at the fact that he probably wants to go elsewhere. DeJounte Murray forced his way out of San Antonio and ended up in Atlanta. He was pretty good for Atlanta. Like he was the one that was responsible for giving them that late season push to get into the play-in tournament, or at least he was like the key contributor in that. And I think what they saw with Jalen Johnson, you have a bright future of a core there that of a pretty young guys that you can build around. You already re-signed Onyeka Okongwu till 2028. So you have your big man. At this point, I think it's time to move on from Clint Capela. Like he's already going to be an unrestricted free agent after this season. So if you're going to get something, the time is now. Like you have to trade him for whatever you can. And then the other problem I think that presents itself is, you know, Jalen Johnson's going to be due for a rookie extension next season. So you're going to want to lock him up as soon as possible. So to free up some of that space, you're going to have to make some decisions here. Like, you know, DeAndre Hunter carries a 20-plus million cap hit. Bogdan Bogdanovic also does. So they're going to have – they don't really have the cap flexibility here to just do what they want. They got to be pretty strategic here and offload some of this cap space to not only pay Jalen Johnson, who's clearly going to be a part of their core – but then also make room for the new talent that could be coming in to build around DeJounte Murray, Okongwu, and Jalen Johnson. So, and we can't forget Sadiq Bey. You know, he's on a contract here, but he kind of had an ACL injury, so he's going to be recovering. I don't know what he'll, you know, maybe he'll be back, maybe he won't, but this team has some promise. It's just a matter of what direction do they want to go in.
Yeah, it seemed like a few years ago they had just, you know, however many drafts in a row, they added a bunch of lottery talent. Seemed like the future was going to be bright. And now they've, you know, traded Cam Reddish, and that was a couple years ago, got a protected pick. I think that's where actually they have, or there was the Hornets protected pick, something like that. And then they traded away Kevin Huerter in what was basically, hey, we're just trying to clear cap space. Did the same thing with John Collins. I'm hoping that they don't make another move that's just trying to clear cap space or get money off the books, because that would be frustrating to do that 3 years in a row. But you're right. I think Clint Capela is probably going to be traded. He's on an expiring deal after this season, but he's also getting paid more than Onyeka Okongwu is. They've signed Okongwu to an extremely team-friendly deal. When I was looking up stuff about the Hawks the other day, I had forgotten just how good of a deal that was for Atlanta. I think it was like 4 for $62 or something like that. So it was a very team-friendly deal. I wouldn't be shocked if DeAndre Hunter was moved as well. I think at this point it's about finding good situations where they're actually getting a little bit of value back. Because if they're just doing it to clear the books, how much sense does that make? But also, like you said, like Trae Young has hinted, hey, I'm not afraid to go elsewhere or be traded if you guys aren't serious about winning. If we're serious about winning, sure, let's do this thing here. So they have to maneuver, you know, okay, we need to get some of these contracts off the books, but we also need to bring in players that are going to help us win now. But we also have the number one pick here, and we still have to pay Jalen Johnson. Like, there's so many moving factors for Atlanta this offseason. It's almost hard to project exactly what this roster is going to look like. I think the one player that I can say with 1,000% certainty is going to be back next year is Jalen Johnson. Mm-hmm. Anybody else like could be traded, even Trae Young, who we can talk about first here. And I do have, because you also participated in that dynasty mock that we did that took weeks and weeks to do. But Trae Young went 9th in that. And I think you were actually the one that took Trae Young, if I'm not mistaken. So we're right about where he should go. How much do you kind of think Trae Young will, I'm just going to go and say will improve when the point guard duo of Trae Young and DeJounte Murray is split up? Because he was a first round player the year before they traded for DeJounte. And partially that was because he shot 46% from the field, and every other year of his career has been pretty worse than that. But obviously DeJounte's arrival didn't lower his field goal percentage. It was probably just like a, hey, he had a really good year. But with that being said, how much better do you think he can be as the point guard, not a co-point guard in the backcourt?
I mean, there's only a handful of players right now in the league that can average 20 points and 10 assists. And when you couple that in with his three-pointers, you know, I think he's a better version of Fred VanVleet to me, and I think that there's still some promise in him being able to get a steal, you know, maybe 1.5 steals per game. So I still love Trae Young, whether he stays with the Hawks or goes elsewhere. I think the elsewhere probably gives a little bit of questions, but I think no matter what, he's a starting point guard, and he has shown a continual sustainment of a 20 and 10 threshold, and there's not many people that can do that. James Harden's not going to be able to do it anymore. His scoring continues to plummet. His assists are going down right there with it. The only other player you got there is Tyrese Halliburton. And while Halliburton's way more efficient, who's to say with the right pairing that Trae Young can't improve on that efficiency, right? Cut down on some of those turnovers. I know there was rumors of him potentially being interested in going to the San Antonio Spurs. Sounds like the Spurs aren't interested, but I don't know. There's a couple of landing spots that could be pretty intriguing if you pair him with the right star and I complement his skill set rather than kind of hinder it and cannibalize it like DeJounte Murray did. You know, there's only one ball, and I feel like both of those guys need the ball in their hands. I think if he can get, you know, perimeter shooting as well as a big man that he can still have that lob threat like he's shown with Clint Capela, Trae Young could definitely still be a dangerous fantasy player and have a first-round value attached to his name.
Yeah, and there's obviously a couple places he could be traded to that he'd be able to fit right in and just continue to dominate pretty much anywhere he goes. I'm not worried about him as a fantasy player. Like 25 and 10 is, you know, pretty much what he's going to do. His scoring dropped for the second straight year this year, 25.7 points per game. Shots continue to drop a little bit. The free throw percentage was a little bit down. Normally he's closer to 88 to 90%. This year's 85.5. The steals were career high, 1.3. Still, I mean, that's pretty good. It's above average.
For Trey, that's what you want to see.
Exactly. Right? For arguably the worst defender in the league, though he was a better defender this year because he actually showed a little bit of effort. He's still just very small, and it's hard for him to play really good defense like that. But also career high, 10.8 assists per game. Back up, the threes were back up to 3.2 after only hitting 2.1 the year before. Got rid of Nate McMillan's 80s system on offense and brought in Quinn Snyder's modern offense, which did a lot for him. I think at this point, it's okay. He could get traded, whether it's San Antonio or somewhere else, probably somewhere where he's the main point guard, or they trade DeJounte and they have Trae Young here with either Onyeka Okongwu or potentially the number one pick in Alex Sarr, which would be a really good pick and roll threat in that regard for a rookie to come in. And I mean, if a rookie center is going to come in and have success in the NBA, Trae Young is one of the best point guards to allow that to happen. So pretty much either way, I'm expecting Trae Young to continue to dominate next season. Not too worried about him, even though at times this year it was pretty bad, specifically earlier in the year. And then obviously kind of left a bad taste in everyone's mouth with a poor play-in performance while he was just coming off a pretty long-term injury. So he has a little bit of an excuse, but still pretty bad. And I think that's probably adding fuel to the fire as to why he could be traded as opposed to DeJounte Murray.
So how do you view the front court with Sarr? Let's assume Clint Capella's maybe out of the way. Are they going to start Okongwu initially and then maybe bring Sarr along slowly? Do you envision them being a tall front court? I mean, well, Okongwu is only like 6'9", but Jalen Johnson's definitely a 4. Right. But I wouldn't be surprised. He could probably play 3. I don't know. I just wonder what that front court looks like, or do they have to make other decisions? Because I don't know. Is Sarr going to be ready to just play right now? I mean, defensively, he seems like he's there. I think the question would be the offensive end.
Yeah, I think that is definitely an interesting question to kind of see how Sarr looks once he comes into summer league, comes into training camp, if they move off Capella. I would imagine, regardless of what Sarr is coming in and what he looks like, I would imagine Okongwu is going to be a better player day one.
And since
the Hawks are focused on winning, not rebuilding, assuming they're doing that, that Sarr may come off the bench and that it would be pretty close to what we've seen the past couple of years, where it's like a 26-22 or 28-20 minute split, where Sarr still has a large role. But hey, we have Okongwu. We drafted him number 6 a few years ago. We still really believe in him. And he did improve this past season, even if the numbers were a little bit down. It was partially because he was still coming off the bench. He did expand his range a little bit, which would make that work a little bit more. But like you said, Jalen Johnson is a 4. Like, he's like, having Jalen Johnson at the 3 would just, like, he showed improvement as a shooter, but I don't think he's enough of a threat as a shooter on top of Okongwu, who is, you know, he showed he can hit threes, and Sarr has a little bit of range, but that's not enough perimeter shooting around Trae Young to give him space to operate and make the offense really thrive. So Jalen Johnson at the 4, and then Okongwu and Sarr kind of splitting minutes at the 5 is what I would imagine that would look like in the hypothetical scenario that DeJounte Murray's gone and Clint Capella is gone, and then it's somewhere else, the 2 and the 3, with maybe DeAndre Hunter being traded as well. It's so many rotating pieces at this point for Atlanta. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah. And then at what point, if Capella's moved, where does Okongwu go up on your draft board? Because we know in a per minute basis, and per possessions, like, he was a very effective player. He's never really gotten consistently 30 minutes, but if he does, I mean, are we looking at like a 7th round pick? Are we looking at like an 8th, 9th round pick? I think it probably could be around that 8th. I think probably 8th is probably the safe, but if you wanted to reach, I think 7th probably makes sense.
I think before the Hawks got the number one pick, if I knew Okongwu was starting, going to see 28 minutes per game, I could argue to take him in the 5th. I think, because being the pick and roll guy alongside Trae Young, showing a little bit of expanded range, gonna potentially have an even higher field goal percentage than Clint Capella because he doesn't just miss wide open layups. Having just, more minutes is more.
Doesn't fumble the ball.
That's the most frustrating thing in the world. Great defense, great rebounding. If he just simply dunked everything, other than just like trying to the little hook shots, anyways. Okongwu in 8 starts last year, only 8 starts, 16.1 points, 8.5 rebounds, 1.6 blocks. I mean, that's pretty much
Evan Mobley.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a couple more rebounds is what I would hope for out of Okongwu, closer to 10. But I mean, yeah, I think you can justify a 5th or 6th round pick on him. However, knowing Sar is potentially going to be there, that it probably just evens right back out. And I think 7th is a very fair spot, just because even if he is starting, you just took this guy number 1 overall. We want to get him on the floor. So it could be Okongwu starting and playing 26 minutes per game. So, it seemed like for years, hey, Okongwu was just right on the cusp of being elite in fantasy. Just wait one more year because Capella's going to be gone soon. It's got to happen. And the 1 year that it seems like, hey, like, maybe it is going to actually finally happen, or Capella's on an expiring contract coming up, like, they could trade him or just try and shift towards Okongwu. Boom, add in the number 1 pick.
What percentage chance do you give the Hawks in trading the pick?
Trading the pick, I would 30%, 40%, maybe even maybe 30. I think 30 is fair. I think a lot of it would depend on, one, how the league values the pick. I don't know if you saw that rumor that came up today. I think it was Ryan Russillo that had the source, like his source said that drafting with the number 1 pick is equivalent to drafting Tobias Harris. Okay, one.
I thought that was, he was just hating on Tobias, but.
Right, like what a stray. Just like I'm trying to discredit this and discredit Tobias Harris at the same time, but.
He's not even a Philly dude too. So that's why I thought that was kind of funny that he took that stray, that gave him that stray there. It's weird. But I think he also kind of has a point though, because. You know, a guy coming over with 7-1, you know, definitely still has some learning to do. Like, he's not like a game-ready LeBron James, Wembanyama type of talent, right? So, you know, these contending teams may not be interested in, you know, investing in that. Now, if I'm like the Washington Wizards, sure, yeah, I would like Alex Sar, but are you going to trade up one more spot to get him? Probably not worth it, right? So,
yeah,
it will be interesting to see if they get fielded any offers of, like, you know, maybe there's some team that's secretly been coveting him. I don't know. That just screams like an Oklahoma City Thunder move to me, to like swoop out of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, hey, we needed a big man to put next to Chet. Boom, we got our 7-1 dude, and we got plenty of draft capital to send to you guys.
We'll take Jalen Williams and we'll make that happen. But
you're going to get Josh Giddey.
Oh, goodness gracious. but I think it really is interesting because, you know, Brandon Ingram is a guy that's expected to get traded. Okay, now Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen, two other guys that are expected to be available. Who else is going to be available come this summer and is like the number 1 pick in a package enough to bring in these guys? Or the Pelicans are going to say, hey, even for Brandon Ingram, where his value is lower than it normally is, the number 1 pick and a contract to match isn't enough for us. Or, you know, in a normal year, the number 1 pick is just almost too high of a value to even move in most cases. Right. But this year it's like, is it enough? So I think that really impacts trades. I'd personally rather just take the shot on Sar as opposed to trading for a lower level star that may not even work properly.
Yeah, that's fair.
The other side of the point guard equation is DeJounte Murray, who went 43rd in our dynasty mock. 28 games without Trae Young. This year he averaged 25.1 points, 5.8 rebounds, 9.1 assists, 1.8 steals, 3.3 threes. Assuming that either he is traded somewhere where he is the number 1 point guard option and he's not doing some co-backcourt thing with Trae or similar to that, or they trade Trae Young and he is the point guard in Atlanta, is he back to being a fantasy superstar for you? Because, I mean, he was a first rounder the year before they got him, and now he's kind of going back to that. And he showed that he's still capable of doing that when he's running the offense. Like, is he a guy that automatically bumps back up to probably a second round value, maybe even higher for you?
I don't know that I would go that high for DeJounte. I think his ADP this past year at 35 is fair. Like that, I think that that's around the time where I would select him. I'm not going to get too careless with it, because I think if he goes to another spot where he's going to have to chuck the way that he did in Atlanta, he'll fill up the stat sheet in terms of rebounds and assists, but the scoring I think is probably going to cap itself around 22. 23. He has developed a three-point game. It's still not extensive. Like, I don't expect him to go up to like 2.5 or 3 a game. The steals, they are what they are. You know, he'll be over 1.5 for most seasons. So I think we pretty much know who he is at this point. And no matter what, like, I feel like he's not going to go to like the Washington Wizards or something like that. Like, I think there's some compelling cases. Like, maybe he goes to like the Orlando Magic. If there's some appetite there, he's going to have to be sharing the usage. So I'm hard pressed to find a scenario where he's going to be on a tanking team enough to preserve a second round value, but I think third round is certainly in play. Just given what he's shown playing along amongst other stars and where his fantasy profile kind of sits now at how old is he now? It's like what? 27, 26, 27,
27.
Yeah.
I think maybe even close to 28 now. I think he's two years older than Trey.
So he's pretty much it at the prime, approaching prime levels. And like, I just don't see what more of his ceiling he's going to capture unless he's on like a completely terrible team where he can just soak up, you know, 25%+ usage.
That's very fair. One of the rumors that I have seen is a pretty much straight up swap between DeJounte and Brandon Ingram. I don't even know. Like, I guess for New Orleans, they would still have CJ McCollum, and I'm assuming they're not going to bring him off the bench. So that may end up being like DeJounte would be the point guard, but CJ would also have the ball in his hands a good bit. Obviously, Zion has shown a little bit more playmaking, and so he's going to have the ball in his hands. It probably isn't the scenario where DeJounte can come in and average 9 assists per game, but I would still assume that he has the ball in his hands enough to maybe get 20 points, 6-7 rebounds, maybe 7 assists per game. So it'd be better than Atlanta, but still not anywhere as good as what it was in San Antonio.
So who would move to the bench in that scenario? Would you start Zion at center?
I think it would probably just continue to be where Trey Murphy's coming off the bench. And I hate that. No, I hate it. I would rather.
They should just keep DeJounte. They should just like stick with CJ if that's the case. Like, I feel like the right move for them, like, I don't know who their player would be, the big man that they would covet, but like they have to replace Valanciunas because he's a free agent. And I think Zion's too small to play the five. So if they could just solve that, they have every other position pretty much handled right now.
Right.
Maybe a backup point guard. I could see that, you know, maybe them being in the market for that. But I feel like they have to start Trey Murphy at this point, because they're also going to have to like pay him. And are you going to be paying your sixth man that much off the rookie extension? That's going to be a tough pill to swallow for David Griffin.
Well, I'll make things easy. We'll trade him Clint Capella and DeJounte Murray, and we'll take back Herb Jones and Trey Murphy. How about that? Because then
now I don't mind the Clint Capella insertion there. That's intriguing.
I think it just destroys every bit of spacing they have, but I don't care. I'm a biased Hawks fan. I want the Hawks to have Herb Jones and Trey Murphy.
You just need a rim protector. Just have him just, you know, and they can still stagger those minutes with like Larry Nance or something if they really want to, because Willie Green loves to play small, apparently. So if that's the case, bring in Clint Capella for 20 minutes a night, let him get some rebounds, get some blocks, and then sit him on the bench and then play Larry Nance.
There we go. And we will talk about Jalen Johnson quickly before moving on, or we can take our time talking about Jalen Johnson. He's fun to talk about. Aside from a good bit of the injury concerns that kind of been there this year, I think he played 56 games, multiple ankle injuries. Pretty frustrating, but I think with his play style, it just happens. Hopefully he can stay around or closer to north of 60 games when he's, you know, starting next season. But injuries aside, how high is his ceiling? Like, is he like every single year this guy is potentially a top 10 fantasy player, or is it like a top 25 fantasy player, or is it he's kind of what he was this year, top 50, and that's just kind of where he's at.
I think it's too early to tell, but I think a top 50 is a pretty safe estimation for him, especially like, you know, where you were probably saying Okongwu would go. That's where I would assume Jalen Johnson would eventually go. Like, he's going to be going in that fourth, fifth round territory. I think it's a bit of a reach going in the third, but I get it. But I'd also just want to see like what the roster looks like. But if, you know, you're losing key pieces like Trey or DeJounte or Clint, that's going to open up more opportunities for Jalen to shine. And, you know, I don't think we haven't seen his ceiling as a scorer. I don't even know if we've seen his ceiling as an assist and as assistant and a playmaker. So that's where I'm extremely encouraged. It's like, if you can actually figure out a way to play through him more, dude, he's going to be a fantasy beast. So I feel like we're probably a couple years away from him being, you know, a third round, second round type guy, but I don't think it's far away or far-fetched to think that he can achieve that.
I mean, he's only 22, and this was his first year really playing a lot of minutes. Like, he played 15 minutes per game the year before, so it wasn't a ton, and there was games where it was less than that. Obviously, a few games where there was more due to injuries or whatever. Right. But his upside is crazy. I mean,
dude, 13th. I think he went in the 13th round. Like, his ADP was around like 130-ish, right? Yeah. So
it was, you know, late round swing.
But he was probably one of the best values. I mean, there's probably a handful of guys you can name that were drafted or undrafted outside of 130, 140 range that were like top 50 guys. So he's already made his mark on fantasy. Now the question is, how high do you get him? I don't think that this was a fluke. It's just a matter of like, how high do you reach at this point, given the conditions and where Atlanta's at and where he could grow. But I'm not really too concerned about the injury thing. I think that was it was a fluky year. To your point, played more minutes, first year getting kind of acclimated to playing that amount of minutes and that workload. I think he's going to be solid, man.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that it's not a recurring issue with him. But I think another thing that gives me a little bit of hope about the playmaking is they traded for DeJounte Murray after that awful Heat series where they just completely took Trae Young out. The worst stretch of basketball that he has played in the NBA. And it was pretty clear that, hey, when he's not touching the ball, the offense is not going to go. Like, it's just, they needed somebody out there to facilitate. And it just wasn't working with Bogdan Bogdanović and Kevin Huerter as the secondary ball handlers. So they brought in DeJounte Murray. And now Jalen Johnson has emerged. And it's like, okay, this is a guy that can facilitate. This is a guy that can push the fast break. This is a guy that, you know, despite being a forward, can bring the ball up the floor if they're, you know, fold an eye on Trey, not even letting it get the ball in, which happens. So I think that opens up a lot for this team that, okay, now we're comfortable moving off DeJounte and just having Trey be the main point guard because we can make it work with Jalen Johnson. And that also helps him get more playmaking opportunities. So sky's the limit for him. We've talked about Alex Sarr probably being the guy. I mean, there's other, like, I think Zachary Risacher is another guy that just based on betting odds could go, but I'm telling you right now, if they take anybody other than Alex Sarr, I'm going to be upset.
You're going to be looking for a new team to support at that point.
Oh no. See, that's my issue is that I can't do that. As a matter of fact, all of my teams just stink. And the more heartbreak, that's what keeps me going. Apparently, like, I grew up a UGA fan. I'm still a UGA fan, but I've almost kind of like lost interest a little bit because they're winning.
Yeah.
Whereas my interest in my Jets has never been higher. And that's heartbreak every single freaking year.
Being a Jets fan was almost as bad as being a Knicks fan until the Knicks finally turned it around. So I don't know. Maybe Aaron Rodgers can last more than a play or four plays this year.
The goal is 8 plays, and then we'll go from there. We'll move on to Chicago. They're coming off a season where they went 39-43, finished ninth in the East, and then they lost the second play-in game after beating Atlanta. They have pick 11, and their overall team direction to me is just in limbo. And the difference between Atlanta and Chicago is that Atlanta has a franchise player in Trae Young. DeMar DeRozan is a star, but he's an aging star. Zach LaVine has had a million question marks about what he can be as – I wouldn't call him a face of the franchise. DeMar is the closest thing to a face of the franchise they have, but, you know, you're coming off a 39-43 season and you're I would see like 34 at this point. So
yeah, he's getting up there.
Yeah. It's where does this team go from here? Recent rumors suggest that they're going to bring DeMar back and just try and run it back. And that just makes zero freaking sense to me whatsoever. How do you kind of feel about what Chicago has done given, I think it's been at least 2 years since they've made a trade. If I'm not mistaken, they are just middle of the pack trying to put butts in seats. Apparently like that's their goal.
So yeah, I was kind of surprised that you didn't put DeMar DeRozan as a key piece here, just considering I think he's the floor guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you need a table setter, someone that's a veteran who will play a lot of games, show up for you night in and night out, and just kind of shape the culture. And I don't know what Nikola Vucevic does, but he seems like a quiet guy. Maybe he's a quiet leader. I don't know. But he doesn't strike me as someone that's going to like rally the troops and like get everyone motivated to come play in every night. So while Coby White is an emerging star,
yeah,
or emerging franchise player, I do think it makes sense to bring back DeMar if your choice is Zach LaVine and DeMar. Zach LaVine is making entirely too much money for the injuries, for his lack of interest in wanting to play in Chicago. Like, if he didn't get hurt, I don't know if everyone just forgot the fact that this dude was bitching the whole time. He was like the first 15, 20 games he was with Chicago about them not winning. They were a better team with him off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And DeMar DeRozan, you know, kind of helped them also, you know, similar to DeJounte Murray, will them to a play-in tournament and playoff contention. So, you know, I think at this point, yeah, DeMar's old, and in basketball terms, and he's going to ask for a pretty considerable amount of money. But at this point, I don't know that Chicago is a great destination. So if you have a player that's willing to stay of his caliber, all-star level, NBA champion, I think you hold on to him and then build everybody else around that. Nikola Vucevic, I think that's just they're stuck. You traded for the man. You gave up picks for him. Like, you can't just, you know, get rid of him. And he's not really that coveted in the trade market anyway. And at this point, I think it's about, you know, how do you build around Coby White? I'd be okay if Patrick Williams, they moved on from him. He didn't really live up to his draft capital at all. I would assume it was solid. And the other key piece that I think that is probably their most coveted piece is Alex Caruso. And given Lonzo Ball hasn't made his way back to the court yet, even though he's running, I think that they need to keep that core together. Coby White, Ayo Dosunmu, Alex Caruso, DeMar DeRozan, Vucevic. Figure the rest out later. You're not going to be winning the NBA championship. You're not going to be even going to the – maybe in the first round of the playoffs. But at least it gives you a starting point to build chemistry and kind of take this rebuilding franchise that's kind of also in limbo in a new direction. And eventually, you know, you'll probably get enough draft picks that you can kind of reshape and retool around those younger guys rather than DeMar DeRozan, who's going to probably be out of the league in a matter of like a few years.
And the reason I didn't have DeMar or Vucevic on this list is just because I think we kind of know what they are. Like, solid fantasy players aging. I think with the four guys that I have on this list, Coby White, Zach LaVine, Patrick Williams, and Ayo Dosunmu, I have more questions and or like they have more upside. Those kind of factors. We kind of know what DeMar and Vuce are. The Lonzo Ball question is this dude going to play basketball again? I mean, fingers crossed. I really hope that we get to see him back out there. Like you said, he says that he's at 70%. But I mean, also, what does this team look like? And that's so I have like kind of questions on my note sheet of saying like, hey, like under each player, my question pretty much for everybody is what does this team look like next year? I mean, it's so Coby White kind of took off with Lonzo out. And after Zach LaVine went down, like he was the main ball handler. So he took off. And then Ayo Dosunmu stepped into minutes, especially second half of the year, but it's because Zach LaVine was out. Like, Zach LaVine, what does he look like when he's trying to rejoin this team? And is he going back to being a 25-point-per-game scorer that shoots every play? Or is he going to try and, hey, I see you guys had a little bit of success last year, specifically after I was out of the lineup. Let's try and make this thing work and win basketball games. Or is it going to be, oh, hey, Coby White, Zach LaVine's back. I know you averaged almost 20 per game last year. You're not going to see as many shots. We know you played well, but we're paying Zach LaVine a lot. We've seen what he can do. Him and DeMar are going to be the main scorers. We're going to drop your usage a little bit. Oh, Iodesumu? Yeah, sorry. We're going to have to drop your minutes a little bit. I know you played really well, but Zach LaVine's back. Like, what does that look like to you? And I guess, honestly, starting with Zach LaVine, what do you kind of expect from him next year? Are you expecting him to bounce back? Because like you said, even before he went down, his numbers weren't good. Are you expecting him to be back to the Zach LaVine we know he can be? Or are you kind of, I don't know, out of hope for him?
It's not that I'm out of hope. I just don't know that he's going to warrant being a fifth-round draft pick going into next season. He's going to be – he's 29. I think he's going on 30. He's making $43 million, and I believe his contract only grows. He's got like an escalating contract. So he's not coming off the books until 2027. And if you look at the young stars that are coming up here, Vucevic comes off the books. He's only making $20 million a year, so you can live with that. Like, that's actually pretty good value relative to the market. But Coby White is going to be a free agent in 2026. He's going to need an extension. Alex Caruso is going to come off the books in 2025. If you want to keep him, he's going to need an extension. Dosunmu is also another guy that's going to be coming off the books in 2026. He's going to need an extension. So if you're looking forward and you pay for DeMar DeRozan, at this point, I feel like you have to trade Zach LaVine. I think, and no, not knowing where he could potentially be, if he stays in Chicago, I think he's probably a seventh. I think he probably drops a couple rounds, seventh round value, I'd probably say is fair. Because he's still a 25-5 guy. It's just, is the efficiency going to continue to dwindle? He doesn't really do anything for stocks. So, you know, his skill set is kind of limited in terms of fantasy. We've already seen the best of what he could be. So I'd be curious if he went elsewhere, what would that look like? What team would be interested in his services? Sacramento, I think, is interesting. There's quite a few teams that could use his scoring and his athleticism. Sixers were rumored at one point, but you know, now that he's got that ankle injury coming off of that, I think that just kind of stalled any potential movement that they could have. So once we see that he's fully healthy, I think we'll start to see his name surfacing in trade rumors much more, just considering their cap situation and how much money they're going to have to pay to those younger players that are really their franchise pieces at this point.
Yeah, and I think you also have to ask the question, if you're a fan of a team like the Kings or like the 76ers or some other team that could be interested in Zach LaVine, do you want your team to have to give up the assets to bring in Zach LaVine and pay him $40 million?
Gross, man. $43 million. Like, what was Tobias Harris making last year? $36, $37 million. It just doesn't pay to spend on these aging veterans like that. So, like, that's the one thing that I wonder if the Bulls are going to have trouble with, like, finding a suitor that's not, like, you know, someone that's just looking to absorb some cash, you know, those bottom feeder type teams. And that could ultimately be the end result for LaVine. He may not get to a contender. He might just be shipped out to whoever can absorb that contract at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what it ends up being, is who can match the contract that you'd be bringing in with Zach LaVine that also has no problem giving up, you know, the players that will match that contract. And what does that mean? Is it going to be a team giving up a couple of rotation pieces that are a little bit overpaid just for Chicago to get Zach LaVine off their books? Are they going to have – I wouldn't imagine this is the case, because Zach LaVine isn't, like, that washed, but, like, giving up picks to move his contract? Like, is that how that works? Or is he getting traded to, like, for example, a Washington team that is comfortable taking on that amount of money just because they're not really caring about winning at this point? I don't even know exactly what a trade looks like, but I think you're right. It's the Zach LaVine that finished 25th per Basketball Monster during the 2020-2021 season, way behind us. Top 50 guy, the 2 years after that, that's probably behind us as well. He was 81st on Basketball Monster in 25 games this past season. It's just hard to imagine. Yeah, 25 games. It's hard to imagine a team seeing a guy come off playing 25 games, playing bad in those 25 games, and seeing Chicago as a team win more when he's not in the lineup, and say, yep, we're going to give up real assets to bring that guy in. I think he's going to be a difference maker for us. I don't see that scenario.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. So yeah, I think maybe even, you know, eighth round, maybe seven was too conservative. Eighth round is definitely a possibility. Now I think he will bounce back. It's just a matter of like, if it's in Chicago, I would expect something similar to what we saw in the first half of the year or the first 25 games of this year. If it's a new situation, I don't know, like Washington to me would actually be a pretty compelling landing spot because I don't know, they're just chucking down there. So, you know, I feel like he has all the usage in the world when you're playing alongside someone like Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma potentially. Cause I believe Tyus Jones is
a free agent.
I think he's a free agent. So, you know, yeah, they have some money to spend.
Yeah, no, they definitely do. We'll see how that works out. But as far as Kobe White, how optimistic are you that he can continue to play at the level that he did this year? Because I think, without a doubt, he took a step forward. He is a better basketball player than how he was viewed before last season. But he averaged 19.3 points, 4.6 rebounds, 5.1 assists, 2.6 threes. I mean, there's the factor that Zach LaVine could be added back into that mix and Kobe White sees less shots because of that. But also, just, do you think he's a player that can be better than he was last year? Do you think he's a player that's going to regress a little bit? Or do you think, hey, what he showed last year is something he can continue to do?
I mean, he essentially just replaced Zach LaVine's numbers, 19, 4, and 5. Like, that was Zach LaVine. But I think that there's way more potential as him as a playmaker here. And I think that was what he was kind of showcasing. His clutch minutes were extremely valuable this year for them. I think he can replicate this. He played 79 games, 37 minutes a night. He's a thoroughbred and he's 24 years old. He's, you know, he's got the youth on his side. If I'm the Bulls, I think he's only proven that he's the one you need to back and not Zach LaVine. So I would feel comfortable drafting Kobe White probably as like a sixth or seventh rounder, I think is fair. You know, he was 96 this year. So yeah, I think you could probably get up to sixth round value just depending on what this team looks like. If you leave Zach LaVine there, then I'd probably be looking at him more in like a 10th round type of thing, you know, a back end of the draft type of depth possibility of more, because we've already seen what he could do when he has the opportunity to play 37 minutes. But if that goes down to, say, you know, 28 in a bench role, six man spot, it's going to be less appealing to roster him, at least, or I should say, at least drafting him that high. So, yeah, I would say a sixth to eighth round grade would be contingent on him being the starting point guard going forward.
Yeah, and this is the people's most improved player right here. I know the NBA didn't give him the award, but he's coming off almost a 10-point improvement in points per game. So incredibly impressive jump after, you know, I think he started his NBA career pretty well, and then it like slowly his role kind of dwindled. And after last season, I was pretty much out on him. So it's an incredibly impressive bounce back year from him. If you actually look back at the numbers from the 2020-2021 season, he was averaging 15 points, 4.1 rebounds, 4.8 assists, 2.4 threes. Not too far off what he did this year, but the main difference was that his shooting has improved every year. He's been a much more efficient shooter, like from the floor. So impressive jumps from him. The other two guys I have on this list are Patrick Williams and Ayo Dosunmu. For Williams, do you have any hope for him anymore, or are we just kind of out on him? Even though this is, you know, I think he was the 2020 drafts Kawhi Leonard, 2019 drafts Kawhi Leonard. No, he was 2020 drafts Kawhi Leonard, because every draft has this is a Kawhi Leonard guy. And he was the one in 2020. So is there any hope for Patrick Williams?
I haven't seen it. It just hasn't clicked. It worked sometimes when LaVine was off the floor. But I'm not drafting him. I've seen nothing to indicate that he has sustainable fantasy value. Definitely more of a guy that you would find on waiver wires, pick him up in a bind, stream him for a little bit when he's hot, and then, you know, hope for the best. But at this point, I don't even know if the Bulls are going to re-sign him. I have no idea what his market really would look like because he hasn't reached anywhere near the potential that he was hyped up to be, you know, as that 2020 draft class, Kawhi Leonard, nowhere near that. And I think Bulls fans have just worn tired of his lack of availability and just not really stepping up while seeing starters minutes. So I wouldn't be surprised if they moved on from him, but if he does stay with the Bulls, you know, I would expect him to be nothing more than just, you know, a waiver ad at some point in the season in redraft leagues.
Yeah, I was never super high on him, not any higher than I was previously, so pretty much out on him. And then as far as Dosunmu, benefited a ton from LaVine being out and being in the starting lineup.
Right.
But I don't really see him as a guy that they'll continue to start, whether it's because they're bringing Zach LaVine back or some other move that they make if they decide to make a move. He's a very good basketball player. Like, I believe in him as a talent. I'm just not seeing the situation in Chicago right now where it's going to open up and he can continue to be a long-term starter for them.
Yeah, I think the one benefit of Dosunmu's growth has been his efficiency from the field. He doesn't really stuff the stat sheet too much, but it can't hurt shooting 50% from the field. He gives you almost two threes a game. Seeing 29 minutes was definitely promising, and I think that it showed enough that he deserves a role on this team. Now, if everyone's healthy, does that mean he stays in the starting lineup? Probably not. But I think that there is some upside to him being a sixth man. I wouldn't be opposed to spending a late round draft pick on him in redraft leagues just based off what we've seen from an efficiency standpoint. He doesn't hurt you that much. He doesn't really turn over the ball. So, you know, he doesn't really hurt you that much in any category. You just can't expect these, you know, large spike games where he's going to win you a week in a particular category. That's not his game. But anyone that shoots efficiently from the field and doesn't turn over the ball has a place in fantasy to some degree. I mean, what do you finish 130th, 12th round value? That's still a rosterable player.
Yeah. And he was really like significantly more than just a rosterable player the final 2 months or so of the season. So,
oh yeah. Facts.
It really is just entirely dependent on what does his role look like. And are they going to, you know, bring Zach LaVine back, play him 35 minutes per game, and assume is limited to like 18 minutes per game. Obviously, that's not necessarily enough for him to be the guy that we know he's capable of being. So, I don't know. The solution here really is Chicago, please trade Zach LaVine to Washington. This makes things very simple because it also helps us in fantasy. LaVine can go do whatever the heck he wants and, you know, put up numbers. And I don't even know who they would get back in a deal that makes sense, but it's not my job. That's the GM's job. And let's give Dosunmu and Kobe White, let's let this backcourt develop. They look good. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if that happens. Chicago has the 11th pick. I would assume they're going to go with one of the wings, whichever one's available, whether that be Modest Buzelis, Cody Williams, Dalton Connect, or Ron Holland. Whichever one's available is probably who they'll take in my mind, because we like DeMar. We like a few of the guards. We're trading Zach LaVine. We just got done saying this. We don't believe in Patrick Williams. So we got to fill out that wing. And a lot of these guys have a good bit of upside and could probably also make an impact from day one in some capacity. So they all have options. And we'll move on to the last team that we're going to talk about. The Houston Rockets finished 41-41 this past year, made a run very late in the year that almost had them overtake the Warriors for the final play-in spot, but then they faltered a little bit. They have the third pick, which was Brooklyn's pick from the James Harden trade that leaped up, RIP the Nets. And they also have pick 44. My team direction for Houston is they have a young core and they're ready to compete. And they have Fred VanVleet as a veteran. They have, you know, the four guys I have here, Alperen Şengün, Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, Amen Thompson. Dylan Brooks is a player on the team. And now they're about to add in the number three overall pick, and they should have plenty of options there. How do you kind of feel about how things are going in Houston?
It's going great. And shouts to Ime Udoka for, you know, changing the culture there. I think it was pretty evident from the moment he walked in the building that this was going to be a different team. They're going to take the game seriously. They're going to lock in on defense, and they're going to play through Alperen and Şengün, all things that we were, you know, as fantasy analysts wanting in the Steven Silas era. And I think the biggest question mark for me really is where, what version of Jalen Green are we going to get? Are we going to get the league winning, you know, guy that went off the last 2 months of the season, really fulfilling his upside that I think that many people were really discarding. You know, I think Houston Rockets Twitter was probably the most toxic environment for a majority of the season for Jalen Green, because they were just saying like, yo, trade this bum. It's never going to work. Trade him for Mikal Bridges. Apparently there was a deal on the table for pick swaps and Jalen Green for Mikal Bridges. And I don't know, credit to the Houston Rockets for believing in Jalen Green. One thing that's been consistent with Jalen Green is that he always, at least in his short career, he's always played pretty bad in the beginning. And then he kind of picks it up around the All-Star break and becomes this beast. So I just want to see that consistency from the jump and the onset, because he's one of the guys whose draft capital hasn't lived up to the hype yet. He continually goes anywhere between, you know, the seventh and ninth rounds, and he's consistently a top 200 guy up until, you know, silly season. And then all of a sudden he becomes like a top, you know, a top 100, top 50 guy, or in this case this year, you know, top 30 guy. I mean, dude, he was for a couple of weeks, he was like the number two, one or two fantasy player in the game. So, he has flashed a lot, and now it's just a question of what does this team look like going forward? And does Jalen Green's ascension impact Alperen Şengün? Because a lot of his success happened when Şengün was off the floor. Does this mean Fred VanVleet takes a back seat? Ivan Thompson still needs to get his minutes, because he's one of the most athletic, if not the most athletic. He's up there for the most athletic players in the league. And God forbid if this guy develops a jump shot, like it's a wrap. Like, So I don't know. I'm just really excited. We didn't even mention Cam Whitmore. This team is loaded on the wing. I'm just curious, like, what, I don't even know, what do you need at the number three pick? I'd be probably exploring trading to see if you can get another piece, like a veteran piece, to just bolster this team and make it even better than it is. Because finishing 41-41 after the season they had a year ago, like, this team's on the rise. So I think they could use a big man. I don't know if Steve Adams is going to be ready by the start of the season, but I think that that was a really nice trade that they made that could pay dividends later on. Just really excited about the Rockets. Super high on them. I could talk about Şengün for days. Jabari Smith, kind of a question mark for me. Like, he's good, but like, I don't know where he's going to fit when everybody else is clicking. He'll still be solid, but I don't know if it, he's a top 100 player. I just don't know where, you know, how much better he can get besides that.
Yeah, and, you know, we just talked about a good number of people. We didn't even mention Tari Eason. Like, they have so many players, so many, like, options. Like, yeah. So, like you said, who knows what they're going to do with the number three pick, because they have so many options. I'm starting to realize that maybe some of these episodes, instead of doing three teams at once, I need to just, like, individualize. And
dude, could probably talk an hour on one team, to be honest. Like, especially these teams like this that have, like, so many – fantasy relevant players. And like, to me, like, now that I'm thinking about it, this might be the time that Ime Udoka just pushes the chips in and says, hey, Jalen Green showed you what he can be. We have the upside of Jabari Smith. You know what Dylan Brooks can do. They could package some players here to go get a guy if they really wanted to, and see what this team could really shape out with, like, an all NBA all-star type of player into that roster.
They're in a very good spot, which is pretty impressive considering, like, they gave up a number of assets to bring in Russell Westbrook alongside James Harden. And then, like, it was kind of a barren roster after they traded away Harden. Like, wasn't looking good there. But obviously they brought in a bunch of picks back, and the Nets just didn't work at all, a lot quicker than I think most people expected them to blow it up, which is now helping them get the number three pick this year. So tons of options. So we'll start actually talking about some of these players a little bit. Alperen Şengün went 13th in that dynasty mock. He's been given the nickname Baby Jokic. He hasn't turned 22 years old yet. He will be by the time the season starts, but he hasn't turned 22. How good can this guy be? I mean, is he going to be just Walmart Jokic, Baby Jokic, and just kind of be like a, hey, like a first, second round guy, like around there for a while, whereas Jokic is like, you know, best player in fantasy basketball for a nice stretch. But does he have that ceiling where he could be a top five guy, or are we just expecting, hey, top 20, top 25 is still incredible, but it's a little bit more realistic?
I'm okay spending an early second on him in dynasty formats. I think that that's justified given the age, the progression that we've seen to date. You know, he finished as what top, he was like top 60 this year. But that was largely impacted by his injury, right? Like if he played more games, and I think he probably would have been on a path to easily average, you know, he can get to 20 and 10. He averaged 21 and 9 and 5. Imagine now you reshape the roster. You're still playing through him. I mean, he could be putting up those. I feel like he could probably get to those Sabonis-like numbers, you know, 20, 10, 7. And once you start seeing that assist creep up to the 7, that's where you're going to get him to be, you know, top 30, top 20 type player. And I don't think he's that far away from that. And then also look at his free throw percentage that improved. Yeah. You can get that over 75 or even get to like 73. That's going to be another nice little bump for his fantasy value. So he's added the 3-point game. I expect that to kind of evolve over time. Maybe he can get to a block a game, and then he could be like a one steal, one block a game type of guy. The sky's the limit for this kid. And I think fantasy managers and basketball fans should just be elated that he's teamed up with Ime Udoka, because I think he's going to maximize what this kid can really be. And just seeing the progression just from 1 year away from the Steven Silas era at 22 years old, dude, like he's going to be nasty. That's a guy that I feel like it might be. So his ADP this year in redraft leagues was 67. I would be okay drafting him. I would take him in the third round. I think we could take him in the third round. I think it's time.
In the Kingy hosted we did the redraft mock before the season ended. Mm-hmm. It was 14 of us. I took Şengün with the 11th pick of the second. So I think that had been pick 25. So because there's 14 teams. So
that's right there. I think that's where we're at. And I think he's going to be, so, you know, 12 team format, that's looking like a third round pick, right? So I think he's trending up to be a third round pick based off everything that we've seen. In his first stint with Houston and Ime Udoka being the head coach there.
Yeah, sky's certainly the limit. The most, I don't want to say the most intriguing, maybe most interesting player was Jalen Green, just because, like you said, I literally have my notes like Jekyll and Hyde. Like sometimes he is unreal and sometimes it's abysmal. But all 3 years in the league, like you said, started slow, but he has to stretch right before the season ends where you're like, wow, this guy, this is why he went number two. And really the question I have is, can he put that together for a full season? Like, obviously not to the level that some of these stretches look like, because that would be, hey, this guy is one of the best players in the league. But can he put together a full season of just really good play? Or is it going to continue to be this choppy, sometimes, please get this dude off the court, get him off my team, I don't want him suiting up in a jersey? And sometimes it's, oh, he's the face of the franchise, he's that good, like the future of the shooting guard position. So, I mean, is it just going to continue to be this messy?
I think it is. And I'm trying to think of a comp for him. And for some reason, maybe it's just because we spend so much time talking about Zach LaVine. But I feel like that's where his ceiling is probably looking towards. Because if he can figure out the efficiency, extrapolating his numbers out, he's probably going to be at best a 20-point score, 4 or 5 rebounds, and maybe 4 assists, right? And if you can get that efficiency up to like 46, 47%, I mean, LaVine was like 49, 48% when he was a top 30, 40 guy. I think he could get to top 50 status, but his inefficiency is what's going to continue to drive down his value. Like, I love Jalen Green in points leagues, but if we're talking category, it's just hard for me to it's hard for me to believe in him to be consistent for an entire season, maintaining that efficiency with so many weapons around them when they're fully healthy. It just seems like he's still tries to find his place in the offense. And oftentimes it's like, he's never finding his rhythm. And I feel like he's more or less a top. I feel like he's a top 120 guy that will just score for you and get you some rebounds and some threes. He'll have some spike games, but I don't know. I don't know that I want to trust in drafting him where his ADP is going to be next year. And I think fantasy managers might believe they're like, oh, he turned the corner. That could be true. But I could also see the case where he just falls back into the Jalen Green that we know. And he struggles for a portion of the season to the point of wanting to drop him, like I unfortunately did this year. Yeah, I regret that.
Who could have predicted that stretch that he had? Yeah, it really is just sometimes really good, sometimes really bad. It's probably just going to continue to be that way. I like the Zach LaVine comp a lot. Like, athletic guy that can, you know, that leads to fun dunks, but he can also shoot threes, create his own shot. The defense isn't great. He's still very young, so maybe things will pan out the way that I think Houston was expecting it to when they drafted him. He went 63 in our dynasty mock, which I think is a little bit more optimistic than where I would
have him. I think so too. I was actually just going to look to see in our most recent mock where he went. I want to say he probably went around, you know, eighth round, something like that.
In the redraft one?
Yeah.
Let me see, I have that pulled up. Let me see if I can find him. Well, Zach LaVine went sixth round. It's a 14 team league. Jalen Green went with the 70th pick. He went the end of the fifth round. So he went before Zach LaVine. That's interesting.
Wow. See, I don't know that I'm that's
it's a little high for me.
That's rich for me. I don't know that we want to trust that. That seems like recency bias.
I think also this mock has taken, I don't know, weeks. I think sometimes these picks are pretty insane, like value wise. I just got Tari Eason in the 11th round. I'm pretty sure it's just because nobody knew he was still available because I had to scroll down. Yeah, I think that's been the case for a number of these picks. But yeah, so Jalen Green, I mean, just got to keep an eye on him. Jabari Smith is the other guy. I know you said that, you know, maybe you're not quite as optimistic. You're just not sure exactly how that looks with him in Houston. He's not a guy I was super high on or have been super high on, but he has improved his numbers across the board. You know, through his first 2 years, just taking a little bit of a step forward. Do you think he's a guy that we could see take another leap? Not necessarily with his usage, because they do have so many mouths to feed now, but in other categories. I mean, I think I'll give you a stat line. You tell me how realistic this is. 15 points, 10 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.2 blocks, 48% from the floor. Like, is that like a realistic stat? I think that's like an improvement, but not like a major improvement in every category. Like, does that sound like a realistic stat line to you?
I think that to me sounds like where he's going to be in a couple, maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
If there's some churn in the depth for Houston, because right now I feel like the biggest threat to Jabari is everyone else that's sitting behind him. I feel like you have to play Tari Eason for his energy, just for what he brings to the second unit. Cam Whitmore has shown that he can be a bucket. He can guard multiple positions. They're just so deep that I'm just like, yeah, I like Jabari, but I don't see him playing more than 32 minutes that he played this year. And when you couple that with the amount of usage going out to other players, I feel like 15, 16 sounds like his, like that's, I feel like that might be his ceiling in the current conditions. Like, I could see him scoring another 2 or 3 points going into next year. That's solid. I think he can up his rebounds to 8.5, 8.6. I don't know that he'll get to 10. Mm-hmm. The biggest growth would be on the defensive end. And if he can get to, you know, a steal and a block, then you're looking at like an Evan Mobley type of guy, in which case he's going, you know, top 50, you know, fourth round type of type of draft capital, I think there's a place for Jabari to go in like in the sixth round, like being a slight downgrade to like an Evan Mobley type guy. But I, again, and because he's really efficient, like, you know, shooting 45% from the field, that could easily go up to 47, 48. He's already 81% from the line, doesn't turn over the ball a lot. There's a lot of things to like about Jabari. I just don't know. I'm just wondering, I just don't know about his, does he not have that dog in him or something? I don't know what it is, man. Like, there's just something that hasn't convinced me yet that like, oh, he's going to be this dude that's going to be a fantasy monster. I feel like him being a top 75 guy is totally fair. And that's probably where he's going to probably sit unless something in his situation changes where he has less competition behind him and he has to play more minutes, like 34, 35 minutes type of thing.
And I think the idea of Jabari Smith is significantly better than what he has shown, even if the numbers have been pretty good. Yeah. Like just imagining, like, I think what he was expected to be coming out of college and the idea that you could have this nearly 7 foot tall guy that can shoot threes, you know, put the ball on the floor, create his own shot, and as a lockdown defender, plays defense on the perimeter. Like the idea of him sounds like a guy that would be dominant in fantasy, but mm-hmm. you know, I think he's a good defender. 0.7 steals, 0.8 blocks last year. You know, he could just be one of those guys that is a good defensive player that the numbers just don't show up the same way. And that's okay. He's still an impactful player for Houston, but it's not as exciting for fantasy. And that's obviously we don't get stats and we don't get rewarded for players playing good defense and forcing turnovers. We need steals and we need blocks. And that's just the way it right. goes. But still, I think upside is there in Houston. The last guy who has a ton of upside as well, and last guy that we're going to talk about, because they have four other guys that have a ton of upside, but Amen Thompson went 34th in our Dynasty mock. As a rookie, his steal percentage was 2.7%, and his block percentage was 2.5%. Now, he didn't qualify for leaderboards because I don't know if there's enough minutes or enough games played, but the league leader in steal percentage was Alex Caruso at 2.9. Amen Thompson, as a rookie, was right on his tail. SGA had a steal percentage of 2.8 and a block percentage of 2.4. And I think he was the league leader in steals per game and almost average a block per game or a little over a block per game. So if Amen Thompson is getting the minutes, he showed as a rookie that he can make that type of impact defensively. And in the games that Fred VanVleet didn't play that Amen Thompson played in, he averaged 13.8 points, 12.3 rebounds. 12.3 rebounds as a guard, 5.1 assists, 1.6 steals, 0.9 blocks, and shot 60% from the floor. Now, as you mentioned earlier, the shot is bad, and he didn't hit any threes in the games that Fred VanVleet didn't play in. Both the Thompson twins cannot shoot. And I think, like, honestly, it was just that's just how they were made to keep things fair for the NBA, because both of them have been dominant in every other facet. And I don't know. I think this guy, this isn't an uncommon idea, but this guy's gonna be a fantasy stud. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And, you know, just in his first season alone, man, I saw enough defensively to get me like, I would draft him higher than probably most just based off of like where I'm trying to win in the margins and getting a guy that's eligible as a point guard, shooting guard, and small forward is like a cheat code for someone that can give you that type of production defensively. So I actually don't need his three pointers. I want right. the stocks. I want the rebounds. This guy could put up a low end double double. Like, how many double doubles did he have this year? He had a ton. What's the number? He definitely had more than, let me see. How many have 13 double doubles? And he only started how many games? He played in, let me see, where was it? Where did my basketball reference go? I'm still sitting here on this number 54. Number 54 record book here.
My goodness.
Amen played how many games? He played 62 games. He started 23. And I would venture that a majority of those double doubles came when he started. So I don't know. They're going to have 11
of them did.
Yeah. So that's almost half of his games. He got a double double. They're gonna have to find room for him. I don't know if that's Dylan Brooks. I don't know if that's, you know, Jalen Green, combination of both, but he's going to be playing all over the lineup. And I just think his versatility is something that Ime Udoka definitely prioritizes and covets. And I think he's going to be that glue guy on the wing. Now, if he can shoot, that's the only thing that's going to keep him off the court. He has to improve his three-pointer. But I think, he shot 14% from three this year. It's got to go up, right? Like, there's no way he's going to shoot
14%. I'm trying to remember because Sar Thompson's was atrocious as well. He was 18. Yeah, it was bad. So he is the better shooting brother.
But, athletically, man, like, they're both just freak athletes. So, like, unreal. Yeah, sign me up for whatever I can for Amen Thompson. Like, he's the same age as Jabari Smith. I think they're both, 21 years old. But, dude, I just feel like even if he can hit, you know, because that's another thing is, like, his three-point percentage sucks, but he doesn't really hurt you field goal percentage-wise. Like, he shot 54% because he's so good at the rim and in the paint. So, there's a lot to like here, man. This guy could average, 11 points, 8 rebounds, a steal, and a block. Come on. Yeah, he could probably get up to 2 steals a game. Let's be honest. This kid is a freak athlete and a tenacious defender. If he can get 28 minutes, whoo. So maybe he's the sixth man. I don't know. But, yeah, I like Amen Thompson a lot, both Thompson brothers. So I have no problem where if anyone wants to reach for a Thompson, I'm for it. You just have to make sure you build your team around similar to the Houston Rockets. Get some shooters around them and you'll be fine.
Yeah. And too much talent is a pretty good issue to have. And it seems to be the issue that Houston is dealing with, which is just going to make it complicated for us as fantasy managers to figure it out and figure out who is going to see all the minutes. They're definitely going to be in the market for a trade. Now they have the number 3 pick and a few young guys that they could use to potentially bring in a star. There will be multiple stars that are available for trade, whether it's Donovan Mitchell, Brandon Ingram. We'll see it. I don't know how many other stars that are available are actually going to be good fits, but who knows? Somebody else may pop up and become available. And Houston will be ready.
Kevin Durant. Yep. I think all these guys are coming on the table because if you look at the talent, can you think of a team that has a better situation in terms of youth draft capital to give up to get a star?
I mean, OKC, but that's probably it.
Sure. Right.
Utah's up there. But yeah, I think those are the main three as far as amount of draft capital. Yeah, but Houston has the number 3 pick in this draft. The other teams have Utah has 10 and OKC has 12. So if a team is interested in moving off a star and starting off a rebuild with the number 3 pick in the draft, then Houston has that. So that makes them a little bit more enticing. And their prospects that could be available for trade are probably a little bit more enticing than Utah and OKC. I would say that.
Do you think it's possible? I'm trying to pull up so Dylan Brooks is only making $22 million a year. And then people were getting fried for giving him $22 million. But that's actually not that bad of a deal based off of what he could bring to a contending team. They might try to move him.
I mean, I think
for the Jeff, why would you not try,
Yeah. I mean, he brings you, it's a $22 million contract. That's $25 million with the defense and negative $3 million for offense. So it evens out. So, yeah, I mean, I think you could pair him with one or two other guys and really bring in a true star. Like you can make that happen with Dylan Brooks there. They can make the money work and they have the draft capital to make that work. I'd be pretty shocked if Houston wasn't at least in the play-in tournament next year, but I wouldn't be shocked if they were just a straight up playoff team next year. They should be.
Cause they're going to have to pay. Let's see. I mean, most of their contracts are 2027. It looks like, Alperen Şengün's due for a new deal. He's only going to be making $5 million next year. So yeah, his contract extension is, that's coming due. And then you have Jalen Green, actually pretty team friend. I mean, Dude, they have a really interesting situation here. They're actually going to have a considerable amount of cap space.
Interesting.
The only person that's making a lot of money is Fred VanVleet. So yeah, they're gonna make some waves. I'm excited for this. I didn't realize how good their situation is. This is like probably the most ideal situation, arguably next to the Oklahoma City Thunder right now.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on them, but that's going to do it for this episode. Dan, thank you for coming on. Is there anything that we should be on the lookout for? I know you've been publishing pretty much every day different fantasy content, but where can we find that?
Yeah, head over to Yahoo Fantasy app, doing recaps of not only each positions for the next week or so. I also do this article called the Loser Lineup, where I'm just recapping where each losing team in the playoffs is kind of sitting at after they get bounced out of the playoffs. So I just wrote one today for the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're a hot mess, man. What is up with – this is a whole nother conversation.
The rumors, what, man.
Dude, they're just airing out so much dirty laundry. Like, their agents have just been hard at work trying to just do smear campaigns to get – Donovan Mitchell out of there. Darius Garland apparently wants to get traded. Evan Mobley's not happy. He wants to be chosen between him and Jared Allen. So, dude, I don't know what we're going to have a lot of craziness going on in the offseason this year. So, but yeah, other than that, check out the Roto World Basketball Show every Wednesday on Twitch. And yeah, more stuff come from me and Yahoo team. And always great collabing with you, Noah. Great basketball mind, and always love chopping up with you.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, man. Thank you again for coming on. If you want to check out Dan's work, you can find him on Twitter at Dan Titus. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast. Thank you for listening.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.